Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Sunday, March 18th. Before I go anywhere, I want to congratulate Texas A&M for qualifying for the Sweet 16. Big victory. That's the school that two of our sons went to, so we're pretty happy. We're pretty happy around here. Today, as we like to do on Sundays, we'll be chatting with our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Another quiet week in the United States. Well, not really. You've got the resignation or the termination of Deputy Director McCabe. That was a big big news. You have the termination of Secretary Tillerson. He's being replaced by Mr. Pompeo. I actually think that was a smart thing to do by President Trump. I'm kind of surprised that he waited so long, but I think it's a good decision. The Russians had an election today, and guess what? Putin won. The Russians are also having some problems with the UK. We'll talk a little bit about that. Bill has a post about that. There was an election in Pennsylvania, and a pro-Trump Democrat won the election. We'll see what that means down the road. Is there Trump fatigue? You know, I keep hearing, keep reading and seeing articles of declining viewership in many of the cable networks, and people are just getting tired of all the beating up on it's not that they're pro Trump. They're just tired of watching the same thing on CNN 24 hours a day. There was a terrible situation down in Miami with a bridge over in California. The Democrats now have the reality that because they had too many candidates running, they're finding themselves in a situation where in some of the primaries and some of the elections, I mean, in November, there may be two Republicans running against each other on the top of the ticket. It's kind of confusing, but it's the kind of thing that happens when a bunch of children are running particularly left-wing children, are running a political party. So let me begin by saying hello to our birthday boy, Mr. Bill Katz. Happy birthday, Bill.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Silvio. It is, as I said to you, a lot of fun being 27. And I hope you do it again,
right? Well, when you turn 27, Bill, you have a lot of wisdom. So I thought maybe you could share a couple of bits of your wisdom tonight.
Oh, I will. I know I sound a bit older than 27, but let's see, when was I 27? Oh, yes, I got a birthday card from Abraham Lincoln.
You knew him, didn't you?
Abraham Lincoln used to be a subscriber to Urgent Agenda.
I heard you say that one time, that Abraham Lincoln was your first subscriber.
He was, yes, yes. Nice man, very nice man. Not quite smooth enough to be president, but a nice man. The liberals didn't like him.
Well, he had a big hat, didn't he? Did he have
a very big
hat?
Didn't dress well enough for the west side of Manhattan. The liberals really didn't care for him. He told off-color jokes. I don't know where we got him. Vulgar, a corporate lawyer. I just don't think he was right.
Well, he was a little politically incorrect. Could we say that about Abraham Lincoln?
Yes, he really was. I would have much preferred the guy who at Gettysburg gave the 2.5-hour speech, Edward Everett. He sounded so good.
That's right.
so good. I mean, how can you turn a man? You know, Silvio, I actually met somebody like this last week. I was having lunch with someone in Manhattan, and a lady came over to our table. This is absolutely true, and said, "I could not help but overhear your political conversation." It turned out she wasn't on my side. She was a real West Side liberal who said she's mentioned Obama, and he said, "I always loved listening to him." Gee, you know, I that's the whole thing. But there are people who really do think that way. If someone is worth listening to and sounds good, he must be a good president. And boy, you know,
well, yeah.
it's been said many times that Lincoln could not be elected today.
He would have a difficult time on television. I just don't see him as a very telegenic kind of president. But, Bill, I wanted to, there's so many things to talk about today. I mentioned there at the very end what's happening in California, where they have so many guys, so many Democrats running for some of these offices that you now have the nightmare scenario where the top two are Republicans. So you could have actually two Republicans running against each other in districts that the Democrats expected to win or at least retain. I said, you know, that's what happens when you have a bunch of children running the party, but that's not far from the truth, Bill.
That's absolutely correct in California. You do have children running the party. I mean, it is an extraordinary operation to know that, first of all, California, not too many decades ago, was a solidly Republican state. And I think that many people are unaware of it. I mean, this was the state that was governed by Ronald Reagan. And now it is a overwhelmingly Democratic state, but only in certain areas. There are parts of California that are still heavily conservative, but they are simply outvoted by the coastal areas and by the endless number of universities they have there, some of which you kind of wonder if they're really universities or just propaganda outlets. And it has become solidly Democratic. The Democratic Party of California recently had a convention that was just, I mean, right out of Karl Marx's playbook. I mean, all this left-wing rhetoric and the treatment of Dianne Feinstein, who, while she's a liberal, is a thoughtful liberal, and I think has been respected on both sides of the aisle during her tenure in the Senate, and they treated her so shabbily. This is dangerous because that party is going off the left-wing fringe, but you'd never know it by reading the mainstream press because the mainstream press kind of agrees with that stuff.
Yeah. Well, they have problems out there. Some of these districts out there are going to find themselves with a couple of Republicans running, and I don't know how many of them are, but, you know, a couple of them is probably a lot more than they were planning to. Another quick thing that happened this week, Bill, I thought we'd jump on this one early, and that's our, you know, Mrs. Clinton in India talking about married white women. And, what she said was correct, that the party has a problem with white men and white married women. And if she had stopped there and maybe said, maybe we need to work a little bit more at getting their vote. Maybe we've gone too far off the center. Maybe we need to work with them a little bit more, you know, just to get their vote. But then she goes off with this thing about married women voting for President Trump because their husbands told them to. I mean, that's just stupid. I mean, who would say something like that, Bill?
She would.
And she
said it. It was a foolish thing to say. She says many foolish things. She is way past her sell-by date. And another thing she kept doing in India was falling. I mean, she had two major falls. And, you know, you wonder what kind of physical shape she's in and what kind of physical shape she was in during the election campaign. Now, the comment she made about white women, she kind of pulled back a little today, saying it was misunderstood. I don't think it was misunderstood. I think she meant that exactly. One of the things you notice about many feminists, and she is a kind of self-declared super feminist, is they have contempt for other women. You know, they have contempt for the people they claim to represent because they feel they're so much better than those people out there. And I think she expressed that these are women who just listen to their husbands. Well, I'm sure some do it. I'm sure some husbands listen to wives. But it was just the kind of statement you don't make. And especially to restrict it to white women. I mean, to make a racial issue out of it. I mean, she is just the problem with Hillary, well, among many other problems, which would take 2 or 3 hours to discuss. The problem with Hillary is she's stuck in the 1960s. There was a professor this week who wrote that many of the problems we're having today involving political correctness and behavior on college campuses actually originated in the 1960s. And I agree with that because I was at the New York Times then and I saw these things happen. Much of this comes out of the 60s. Much of the rhetoric comes out of the 60s. It's a resurrection of an old age. And basically It is something that the mainstream media will not report on accurately. They really do suppress and change the news. I think Trump is quite correct when he uses the term fake news. I wouldn't use it quite as much as he does, but I think there is plenty of it out there. There really is.
Yeah, well, he wouldn't even have to. Sometimes, you know, Trump's response tends to engage in overkill.
Yes.
A lot of times he wouldn't have to say anything, and the story is so obvious. I mean, this one in particular. So I don't know. I just don't think she's that, and I don't. I need to say this carefully. I just don't think she's that politically smart. I'm sure she's a very intelligent lady, you know, by the standards of education and all of that. But I just don't think when she's on her feet that she's that politically smart, that she knows what to say. I don't think she's got the antennas, for example, that her husband had when he was campaigning. He was always very, I mean, he was not tone deaf at all at no point. And I don't think she does. And then to, I thought it was interesting too, you know, she has to bring in the Indian American component into this, as, you know, bringing that into the presentation. And it's like, you know, she's like checking off all the groups, you know, that she needs to check off. I don't know. I think she's, if she was a Major League Baseball player, she would be released for simply not being able to throw strikes anymore, Bill.
I think you're probably right. And I think one of the problems is that she has really taken on the characteristics of the group and groups that all her life she wanted to be part of, which is the East Coast elites, the intellectual elites, the feminist elites. I think those are her people today, and I don't think she really has any regrets. I think that is exactly who she is, and that she really does not go out and talk to people who she claims to represent. And I think this is not an uncommon situation.
Yeah, well, she's you know, if I was a Democrat, I would be hoping that she would just retire and go to New York and spend a lot of time with the grandchildren. And just get out of the political. I mean, if I was a Democrat, I wouldn't want to see her again until the next convention, when obviously she would go there as the last nominee, or she would go there as the wife of the previous president or whatever. But I think they need to get her off stage and just say, Hillary, it's time for new people. Get off the stage. One quick thing I wanted to ask you, Bill, before we get into, we've got some big topics tonight with the FBI and Secretary Tillerson and what happened in with Russia, but I wanted to get your reaction to this. Bill O'Reilly has been basically this week talking in writing as well as on television and radio that he believes there is Trump fatigue, meaning that people are just, they've had enough of this. I mean, they're turning off their televisions. And do you think that's true? Do you think that's true? I mean, do you sense that people are just saying, you know what, there's too much? This criticism has gone way too much. Do you have that feeling, Bill?
I do, and I think that it is even a feeling, and I think this has been pointed out, a feeling on the part of Democrats. I, you know, unless they are absolute Trump haters, and there are some out there, I think even they are saying, enough with the Trump bashing. Give us some news. You watch CNN, and it is amazing how few actual news stories are reported. This is a company that calls itself the first name in news. They're not the first name in news. They may be the first name in views, but not the first name in news. They have 24 hours a day to report real news stories, and basically it's a 24-hour talk show. They report a couple of stories, usually anti-Trump stories, and then they go into these long discussions with so-called experts and commentators. I was just thinking today, when is the last time I've ever seen a news story on CNN about education, about the state of our universities? I don't think I've ever seen one. They used to have reporting that was, you know, more broadly based. You don't see whole areas covered. You don't hear anything about, for example, the condition of particular industries. You don't hear anything about the status of crime in our big cities. Baltimore in the last year has been a major story ever since the incidents that led to President Obama denouncing the Baltimore police force. The city is a mess. The mayor says murder is out of control. You don't see that on CNN. you get the feeling that it's an organization that is devoted entirely to a point of view, to an agenda, and the story must fit within that agenda to be reported. And that's a frightening
thing.
That's
right.
You know, I don't mind MSNBC. They don't deny what they are. We are a liberal network.
Right.
This is who we are. That's fine. As long as you identify yourself correctly, go do what you want. And I have no problem with Fox, which is clearly tilting in the conservative direction. I do have a problem with an organization like CNN or the New York Times, which tells you that they are a neutral organization, all the news that's fit to print, and it's not true.
Yeah. Well, what I find interesting is, like, the other night, let me just get this in. We'll take a break, and then we'll get into the FBI story, because that's a big one. But the other night when they announced the termination of Deputy Director McCaid, I watched Fox News for a while, and then I said, well, let me flip over to CNN and see what they're talking about, and MSNBC, see how they're treating the story. So I did something I don't normally do. I usually don't flip channels when there's a story, but I wanted to get a perspective of what they were doing. Well, both CNN and MSNBC were not talking about the termination of Director McCaid. They were talking about this lady, Stormy Daniels, or McDaniels,
of course,
or whatever her name is.
That's the
and I'm sitting
story.
There saying, yeah, and I'm just sitting there saying, I mean, this is ridiculous. You have a huge political story, and I'm, you know, it may be that this thing with Stormy Daniels turns out to be bigger. I don't think it is, but it may be important. I don't know. But my goodness, I mean, that's like, you know, the Pearl Harbor attack and you know, and a couple of networks are talking about, you know, I don't know, something else that has nothing to do with the huge story of the day. So I don't understand how their viewers can take them seriously when they're not even talking about the big story of the moment, Bill.
Well, I don't know that either, and I wonder why people watch this stuff. I mean, is it that they are so anti-Trump that it just soothes them to hear it, or do they just kind of have it on as background? I do think, as you indicated earlier, that many people have stopped watching and stopped listening and stopped reading. But there are some out there. Now, it should be pointed out that these cable networks, this I think is an important point, really do not have very large audiences when compared to the general population of the United States. I think Fox News averages about 2 million a night, but this country has 325 million people. So it's actually a number of viewers in each one of these networks that is less than 1% of the population of the country. However, they have a great deal of influence where it really counts, and that is in Washington. Because in Washington, everybody watches those cable systems. That is where they get their 24-hour news or views or whatever you want to call it. But I can't watch CNN. I used to be able to watch CNN. Look, it was always a liberal network. That, you know, let's not kid ourselves. Ted Turner, who founded it, is a very left-wing guy. He married Jane Fonda, after all. I mean, the fact that he could stand her at all should tell you something about him. And since the Trump election, it has gotten much, much worse. And the fact of the matter is their audience isn't that big, but it is influential.
Well, you're right. It is influential because of the people who are watching. But when you look at the total audience, I mean, CNN has lost over 30% of their viewers. I don't know
That's
of too
right.
many businesses that can lose those kinds of numbers. I mean,
That's
sooner or later.
Yeah,
I don't understand how that happens.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know why the guy who runs it, Jeff Zucker, isn't replaced. Unless, of course, the people at Time Warner, who I believe control CNN, I think, maybe they just feel that they too want to be leftist journalists. They too want to bring down Trump. And so we'll take the loss and just let them do what they want to do. And that may very well
maybe
be the
so.
Case. Yeah, that
may
be.
That may be,
the case.
Or their overhead. The other thing, too, about these news organizations, they don't have a lot of overhead, at least not in doing these shows. Now, they do have a lot of technical investments that they have to make and having all these reporters. But I don't know how many of those reporters, let's say overseas, are actually employees of the organization or whether they're independent contractors who come in. I mean, I don't know. But I don't know of any business, Bill, that can lose 30% of its business or audience or customers in 1 year. And not be in an internal panic, or at least the management be looking for some explanation as to how they're losing business like that. I don't know of any
That's
business
true.
I've ever been associated with. I mean, you lose 5% of your sales, and everybody's wondering what happened. You know, what did we do wrong? I mean, let's call the customers and bring them back or whatever. So I don't know. I just find it amazing that they can lose business like that and not seem to have any major concern. We're going to take a little break. I want you to hear from one of the Blog Talk Radio sponsors. And then when we come back, we'll get into Secretary Tillerson and this whole thing with the FBI. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Let's get back to our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Well, Bill, two big stories this week. We're getting used to this, you know, these weeks of big stories. But this one, Secretary Tillerson, and then the other one, of course, Deputy Director McCaid. Which one would you like to tackle first?
Doesn't matter. They're both fascinating.
Yeah.
The Tillerson
they
thing.
Are.
The Tillerson thing was, again, poorly handled by Trump. I mean, he are so many good things he does. Somebody once said about Harry Truman, he does the biggest things in the biggest ways and the littlest things in the littlest ways. And the same thing can be said about Trump. If you're going to fire a man, do it with some dignity. Do it with some class. He knows how to do that. Instead, he tweets it out before Tillerson even knows it. Highly inappropriate. And again, even for those of us who are rooting for him, you get so frustrated after a while with the way he does things sometimes. So unnecessary, these unforced errors, these self-inflicted wounds. Was Tillerson a good Secretary of State? Well, apparently, in Trump's opinion, no. I certainly didn't hear any raves about him. He was probably the wrong man for the job. Pompeo is definitely the right man for the job. But he is coming in under circumstances that could have been better, and I think Trump ought to think about that. Pompeo,
well, he's over. Trump is over. Forgive me for interrupting, but Trump can be overbearing, and that's what I find troubling. I mean, in the sense that you're exactly right. I never supported Secretary Tillerson. I never thought he was the right man. I think he would have been a great Secretary of Energy. He would have been Secretary of Commerce. He would have been a great ambassador to the UK. He would have been actually a pretty good ambassador to Mexico because of the energy connection. And, you know, they know him real well down there because of that.
Yeah.
So he would have been real good in those jobs, but never Secretary of State. I never really understood the decision. So on one hand, I say, well, look, you know, Mr. Trump is recognizing that he made a mistake and he's making a change. Hey, that's a good thing. That's a good thing to recognize a mistake and make a change. But could he not do it a little bit better? That's, again, the part that frustrates me, because Secretary Tillerson didn't deserve this. I mean, the guy was not the best option, but it could have been a lot worse. It could have been Secretary Kerry. It could have been Secretary Clinton. I mean, we've had a lot worse. Tillerson just kind of floated around the world and never really did any damage, but he never, you know, it was just the wrong guy for the job, Bill. But you could have been should have been treated better. I agree with you
he
on that,
been.
Though.
I think he should have. Now, as far as the other story that you mentioned, you mentioned the Brennan story, did you? The attack by
The director, the whole FBI thing. I mean, that has a lot of angles, that story. You got Brennan, you got Samantha Powers now talking, you've got Director McCaid. I mean, the whole thing, I mean, it could be a segment for a whole night. Because it's awfully complicated, but let me ask you one more thing about Tillerson, though. Let me raise another question about Tillerson, because he's going to have to be replaced, and I think it's a good choice. Yeah, I mean, Pompeo is an excellent choice, but in this environment in Washington with an election coming up, would it have been better for President Trump to have waited at least till after the election? I mean, the Democrats are not going to be in any mood to approve anybody. You're going to have to get the Secretary of State done with 51 votes or something like that. I mean, that doesn't make a lot of sense, Bill.
And he may not get the 51 votes. That's the tragedy here, that the partisanship is so great that the interests of the country are being put second by the Democratic Party. They don't care. They would rather there not be a Secretary of State so they can blame everything on Trump. It's just anti-Trump, 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 without any regard for any policies. Do they have any policies? Do they have any ideas? They have played this phony game about Russia as if they care about Russia. Obama made it very plain he didn't care about Russia. But suddenly, oh, we're so anti-Russian, I can't tell you how anti-Russian we are. Very, very irresponsible. They will have to get Pompeo confirmed quite quickly. I mean, certainly they're not going to wait until the end of the term to do it. And he may not get the votes. It would be incredible, though, and completely hypocritical for every Democrat to vote against this man. I mean, it would be so phony, but yet it may happen. You know what happens to these moderate Democrats. They go to Washington, and they're threatened, and they're told, if you don't vote the way Nancy Pelosi tells you to vote, you're out of the party. And that may happen. That may happen. They may make this a test case. The other one, the one who is nominated for CIA director, that we knew that was going to be a difficult confirmation, and it will be. Even some Republicans have doubts, but yet her reputation is so sterling. And I really wonder whether the Democratic Party wants to run against the woman who's been designated as the first woman to be CIA director. I really wonder, but you never know.
You never know with them. I mean, you're exactly right. It's all politics all the time with them, and that I don't know. That also gets overbearing too with them. Politics all the time. I mean, it's all Trump all the time. I mean, they need to think about the country once in a while. Now, the other story, of course, Friday night was that we got confirmation that Deputy Director McCaid was terminated, and because he was terminated, I guess before 10 o'clock Friday or something like that. That he didn't get his pension, and he, obviously, you know, Mr. McCaid is angry about that. I can certainly understand losing your pension. I can understand that, but it looks like the decision to terminate him came from within the department by somebody actually appointed by President Obama, who did this report. The report, I guess, will go public in a few weeks. I'm waiting to see what the report says. My guess is that there's a lot of bad stuff in that report, Bill. I don't think Sessions would have pulled the trigger. I don't think Sessions would have pulled the trigger unless he had lots and lots of, confirmation that something bad is going on here, Bill.
I think that's true. I mean, I think that you have a situation where a man was under scrutiny by the Office of Professional Responsibility, which is the division of the Justice Department that deals with charges of misconduct, with allegations of improper behavior. And it was the director of that office, who was an Obama appointee, who issued the final report. So I would imagine the report really is bad.
Well, some of the things that, you know, we've heard between the lines that Mr. McCaid was apparently passing memos to Mr. Mueller, that raises a lot of questions about Mr. Mueller. There are some contradictions with Mr. Comey and whatever he said to Congress. I just think there's a lot of bad stuff here. And I will tell you, not because it's on the other side, but if it was a Republican, I would feel that it's time to clean it up. The FBI does not deserve a story like this. The FBI is a great organization. The people working there are great people. They're putting their lives on the line every single day. Good, dedicated civil servants. Law enforcement people, and if I was in the FBI, I want to see this thing cleaned up right now. Let's get it out there. Let's clean it up, because the image of the FBI has taken a hit, Bill.
It has. Now, we should make a distinction between the people of the FBI and the executives who run the FBI, even if they're FBI people. There has always been some controversy at the top. It is a government agency, after all. J. Edgar Hoover became a very controversial figure. He was the founder of the modern FBI, deserves a great deal of credit for a great many things, and some blame for some things that weren't so great. We shouldn't sugarcoat the situation. They, as you say, there are great people in the FBI who risk their lives and sometimes lose their lives. But at the top, on the management level, there have always been and should be questions when people think that the Bureau is operated appropriately or has acted foolishly. There have been accusations, as you know, in the past of becoming obsessed with one suspect in the crime and then later finding out that the suspect was actually innocent. There was the Roger Jewell case where they basically ruined a man's reputation by associating him with a bombing, that, and it turned out not to be true. So there are cases where the FBI has run into some difficulty as a result of its own actions. That must be admitted. But the FBI does, as you say, a fine job in many areas. It was heroic in its operations against the Ku Klux Klan. It was heroic in its operations against the Nazis during World War II. But this is, you know, it's a new day, and there are serious questions about some of the leadership of the FBI. And leadership should always be held accountable, no matter, you know, the FBI, the military, anything. So I think this is going to go on and on and on. And I think the country will tire of this as well.
Well, Roger Simon has an article today. You can read it on Real Clear Politics. It's one of the articles they've got there today for reading. And he makes the case that this is the beginning of a lot of bad things. In fact, he says this is not Watergate. This is the gate of gates. Cute little phrase that he uses. But, you know, reading his article, and I've read Roger Simon over the years. He's never struck me as a flamethrower. I mean, he's conservative, obviously, but he struck me as a serious man. At least that's my impression. And he's basically saying that this is going to bring, or it's sort of like opening the closet finally, and we're going to expose a lot of people. He even mentions President Obama as a possibility here, Hillary Clinton, because you have the Hillary Clinton emails, you have FISA, you have a lot of things where if this was all an accident or this was all a mistake, somebody's got to be held accountable, Bill. If you walk into a FISA court and you don't tell the judge that the information you're using is politically sensitive information, I, as a citizen, I would like to see that person held accountable for that action, Bill. I don't care who does it, Democrat, Republican. This is way beyond parties. This is really the integrity of our system, Bill.
I think you're right. And look, a lot of this, as you just mentioned, President Obama. I think if you look at some of these scandals, some of the accusations, some of the evidence that's presented, you have to go back to the Obama administration and take a very, very close look at the way the Justice Department was run. Was it run just as a political organization, or was it a real Justice Department? And there are serious questions. And there are serious questions about him and his judgments. You know, it's an amazing thing about Obama. He's been gone from the White House now for a year and 2 months, and nobody even mentions him. Nobody ever mentions anything that he actually did as president. It's as if he wasn't there. And to a certain extent, that is true. He left no footprints on the White House. He was basically, I think, a very weak president. We wished him well. We wanted him to do well. He did not really do any of the things he promised to do. He did not bring the country together racially. In fact, he divided it more. His foreign policy did not lead to peace. It led actually to a much more horrible situation in Syria. But nobody mentions him except in terms of the book deals he's making. And I think we ought to take a good, hard look at Barack Obama, but I don't think the press is willing to do it. And I think that has been part of the story here all along.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I can just remember. I mean, I could just imagine what the news media would be like tonight, if there was a story that somebody in the Bush administration, or let's say somebody in the McCain campaign, had promoted false information about Barack Obama, and that based on that false information, they'd say they got a warrant to investigate, I don't know, somebody in the Obama campaign, and that later on, I mean, can you imagine what the reaction would have been, Bill? I mean, there would have been, and correctly so, by the way, there would have been a huge reaction. Compared to this, there's no reaction here. It's almost like, well, yeah, it happened, but no big deal, no big deal. Stop complaining. I mean, almost like that, Bill.
That's exactly right. Look, there is an incredible double standard in Washington. If you'll notice that the, and this is really not new, it goes back quite some time, that if you are a Republican, you're treated one way by the press. If you're a Democrat, you're treated another way. It's not entirely true. There are some Republicans who gain favor, and there are certainly some Democrats who are not viewed favorably. But the way in which the press over time has covered up for the Democratic Party, which used to be my party, by the way, is simply remarkable. I remember the way the press covered up for J. William Fulbright, who was a terrible man. But as long as he was anti-Vietnam War, he was a good man. And that's that hypocrisy. The press is supposed to report the news without fear or favor. That is the standard. That standard has been breached. I think it's now gone. I don't think they even believe in it anymore. And I think that one of the great unanswered questions of the age is, what was the Obama administration really about? I don't think we know, because I really don't think we know what Barack Obama was about. We really weren't allowed to ask any questions.
Well, we were not. If you remember back in 2008, it was like, you know, we couldn't ask anything about his background, because that's, you know, you were racist if you did that. And so I just felt that, I think for me, the big question, Bill, the reason that I would like to know more about what was going on in the Obama years is because I want to know how much Obama was directly involved in it, or how much Obama was just sitting there and other people were doing these things. Sometimes I get the impression, and I'm not trying to defend Obama, I'm not trying to, you know, humiliate him either, but I sometimes get the impression that he wasn't really that engaged. And so the possibility that you had people working for him, doing a lot of weird things like we're learning with the emails and FISA and all of that, I think it makes me wonder if Obama was even around mentally, that, you know, his head was somewhere else, not on the job. I mean, he doesn't have to be overbearing like Trump, but he certainly was the other extreme, Bill.
Yes. And I think that exactly the term you used, that he was not engaged, is right. I don't think you have the feeling that he was never that interested in most of these policies, that he regarded himself almost as royalty, as a kind of a king who presided over us and gave us moral direction, but that the individual policies were not of great interest. You know, we call the health system Obamacare, but actually he had very little to do with it. It was really a creature of Congress, and you really never saw him out there advocating particular ideas on any other policy. If you look, for example, at the Iran nuclear agreement, it's exactly as Trump describes it. It's a disgraceful deal. We got completely taken by the Iranians, and I had the feeling at the time that this did not bother Obama, that he regarded us as responsible for a lot of the international problems. And I think that may very well have been why he never seemed that engaged, that he never was much of a defender of his country. And, of course, if you said that, you were, as you know, the term that you use, you were called a racist, you were called a bigot, you were called a warmonger, you were called a this, you were called a that. They always were ready with names. I think that if we look, you know, Trump has said, and I think accurately, he spends a lot of his time cleaning up the mess that Obama left. And I think that's absolutely correct.
Well, certainly in foreign policy, that much I can say. But the one thing about the Obama years that always would just fascinate me as someone who likes to look at management styles, you have a president who you know, you have the Fast and Furious situation. You have the IRS. You have the Obamacare website. I mean, you have situations like that where he seems totally disengaged. You know, if I'm the president of the United States and I find out, I mean, I have to assume, and I have to assume that there were some good people in that White House. And one of my White House people comes to me and says, Mr. President, I hate to tell you this, but your Secretary of State is using a private email to do her business. That's not only illegal, but it's not very smart, because she's placing herself and potentially you in danger. I would think if I'm the president of the United States, I would say to Hillary Clinton, Hillary, you've got 20 minutes to end this thing. And if you don't use the system that we have, I'm going to fire you. But it seems like he never did that. I mean, with the same thing with Fast and Furious. You know, he was very passive in his response, and I don't think he was any tougher in private. I just think that's the way he was. He didn't really care to get involved in these things. But in not getting involved, Bill, now he had a media that protected him, I'll say that much. But I think, you know, he didn't come across as an executive on top of the job. That's what always fascinated me about Obama, and that's why I'm interested in knowing how much he was really involved. Frankly, I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't really that much involved in all these things with the FBI. I wouldn't be surprised if he was just a bystander, as he was in so many other things, Bill.
I think that's true, and I think one reason is that he, as, and I mentioned this before, I don't think he had much passion for the country. I mean, it was Michelle Obama who said before the election of 2008, this is the first time I've ever been proud of my country. I mean, you have to believe that Obama shared that view. And by the way, he never contradicted her. He never said anything that was a terrible statement, terrible thing for her to say. I just think he felt that that he was prepared to do things for groups within the American population that he believed in, but not for the country as a whole.
Well, that's the way it comes. He came across to me as a very disengaged, almost aloof kind of man. And I just don't think that's a good president. You know, they used to say that George W. Bush would literally talk to the generals, you know, via television or internet television or whatever, every single day or as much as possible. He wanted to know exactly what they needed and so on. I'm assuming that Trump is sort of the same way. But I would think that if somebody walked into Trump's office and said, Mr. President, your secretary of this or this or that is doing something wrong, that Trump would explode and fix the problem. Look what he did with the guy from Georgia, Price. He forced him to resign because he was taking extra flights. That kind of thing would have never happened under the Obama years, Bill.
That's true. That's absolutely true. Everything was covered up. Well, you see, one of the reasons is that the press under the Obama years was not doing its job. It didn't want to. It was quite conscious on the part of the press. They were going to give him a pass for racial reasons, that this was a great moment in American history, and they didn't want it ruined. I mean, all you have to do is look at the press's discussion of the Iran nuclear agreement, which we mentioned a few minutes ago. There was absolutely no attempt to educate people to the effect that this was clearly a treaty, and treaties are ratified by the Senate. He went around the Senate, basically acting unconstitutionally. Mm-hmm. It was barely mentioned. No, he was.
Right.
He was,
this is amazing to me.
Yes, he was protected.
No, this is amazing to me that you wouldn't have somebody in the media asking him the question, Mr. President, why didn't you submit this to the Senate like you're supposed to? Nobody would ask him that. Nobody would ask him that in these press conferences, and I don't know why, but it was. It was somewhat of a challenge for those of us who believe in the Constitution. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with Bill after we hear from some of our sponsors at Blog Talk Radio. Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. We're chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, it seems like every one of these Sunday shows, there's so much to cover that I'm trying to get to as much as possible.
Yes.
But two big stories of the week that I want to get to is Russia and the UK. They had an election in Russia today. Russia has also been in the news here in the United States. But let's talk about this special election in PA, which I guess the Republicans probably should have won the election. I don't dispute that. But when you have two people who basically like Trump, and you have a Democrat who is about as pro-Trump as you can be without being a Republican, I don't know what this means anything other than the Democrat was frankly a better candidate, Bill.
He was a candidate right out of Central Casting. He was a military veteran. The Democrats are looking for candidates like that, young, dynamic military veterans. They present them as moderates, you know, in the great tradition of the Democratic Party. The sad fact is some of them are not moderates. Some of them go to Washington and become absolute, you know, ideologues on the left. Look, being a military veteran doesn't mean you go along with the, you know, with the views of the military. Mm-hmm. It means you're a military veteran. We've had military veterans who come back, who came back at the end of World War II and became communists. Not too many, but we have them. And so this guy is a Democrat. His name is Lamb, and he was elected by about 600 votes. There may be a recount. There may be an examination of voter fraud. I don't know. I think that's all still up in the air. And he got elected in a district that went for Trump by 20 points. But a presidential vote and a congressional vote are two different things. They really are. The Republicans in this case did exactly what Republicans so often do. They worked hard to lose the election. And they put up a very mediocre candidate. You know, you can be a Trump Republican and love the workers. And love them because Trump does. He has an affinity for these guys. I mean, you can be that. And you will get cheers from union members. But the Republican who was put up was a typical old-line anti-union Republican. It was the worst possible choice, just terrible. They have done it before. They'll probably do it again. But they often lead themselves to their own destruction.
Well, another thing, too, Bill, that I found very interesting about this one and also the one in Alabama is that the media kept trying to make it an issue about Trump, but both Democrats kept saying, Jones in Alabama and Lamb in PA kept saying, no, this is really not about Trump. Don't ask me that because it's not about Trump. So I don't know. I mean, I'd like to see a few more elections before I jump to a conclusion. But one thing I can say, Bill, about Alabama and Pennsylvania is the polling in these elections, it's almost becoming a joke.
Yes, it is.
This was supposed to be, you know, the Democrat was supposed to be up by 3 in the average, and he wins by 600 votes. Down in Alabama on the day of the election, you had two polls, one showing Moore up by 10, another one showing Jones up by 10, and he wins by 18,000 votes. So, you know, I think some of these pollsters may very well need to, I don't know, look at their product a little bit more, Bill.
I think so. And, you know, one thing about Trump in particular is he always underpolls. Now, there is one national poll that is consistently now showing Trump much higher than the other polls, and that's the Rasmussen poll. Now, historically, that was known as a, quote, Republican poll. But that and it may be, you know, slightly tilted, but they were the most accurate poll in the last election and one of the few that actually got it right. And they are also the last remaining daily tracking poll in America. The others have all gotten out of that business. They're showing Trump at about 47-48%, which is a lot higher than the other organizations. I don't know which is true. You don't know what's true until Election Day. But I think if the Republicans gave it all they had this November, really brought the issues home, that they could save the House. I mean, they may still lose votes. They may still be close. You know, it doesn't only matter where you wind up. It matters where you begin. I mean, they weren't that much ahead in the House, or aren't that much ahead to begin with. There only was 25 votes or so, I don't recall the exact number, that they have over the Democrats in the House of Representatives. In 1942, by the way, 11 months after Pearl Harbor, when you would think the country would be thoroughly united behind the commander-in-chief, Franklin Roosevelt's party lost 45 seats in the House. This was the party of the commander-in-chief, and the result was that the Democrats only controlled the House by about 4 votes. Most people aren't aware of the fact that these things do happen.
Well, and then you had in 46, you know, a year or so after, you know, winning World War II and, you know, defeating Japan and Germany, Mr. Truman lost both the House and the Senate in 46. So these things can happen.
Yeah.
These things can happen. But let me take a few minutes because we're flying. The clock is flying. But I do want to talk about Russia and the UK. You had an interesting article today about Russia and the UK, and I'd like you to talk a little bit about that. By the way, there was an election in Russia, and guess what? Putin won with 73% of the vote. So,
I was shocked.
Everybody's in total shock about that. So, we'll, you know, there won't be a recount in Russia, I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
This thing with Russia and the UK has become a real problem. Apparently, a couple of people were poisoned. I mean, it's really a nasty story, Bill.
Well, it is, and you get the feeling that the UK in this situation is being helped by other intelligence organizations and nations. The bottom line is two people who were targets of Putin were found subjected to a nerve gas attack. As the Prime Minister of Britain said, the first nerve gas attack since the Second World War, and a British police officer rushing to the scene to help them after they called also suffered some effects of the nerve gas. Now, the police officer is out of danger, but the two Russians who were the basic targets are still very much in hospital and in very critical condition. The British immediately put the blame right on the Russian state. They said this is a state operation and it comes from Russia. Other nations joined in. The United States joined in. The Russians, of course, deny it. The bottom line here is that this has produced a very bitter conflict between Russia and the West. 23 Russian diplomats were expelled from Great Britain. Russia then expelled some British diplomats. Now, one of the things that's very interesting here is that there is one major British politician who did not go along with the condemnation of Russia, and it was the head of the Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn, who is a left-wing extremist who has also dabbled in anti-Semitism. Now, he is the head of one of the major parties in Britain, and his refusal to join the government in condemning Russia has created a tremendous backlash even within his own party. So it is possible that what may come out of this may be Corbyn's weakening, because there is great concern that, that Corbyn, who is pro-Russian, anti-American, anti-West, the most extreme man ever to head a major political party in Britain, there is concern he could become prime minister. And I don't think it's going to happen, but it would be a disaster. And this incident may have been, in terms of internal British politics, the proverbial blessing in disguise, because it exposed him for exactly what he is.
That's right. Well, looking ahead next week, Bill, there's a lot of stuff actually on potential next week, you know, more on this, on all of these, the FBI. I think there's more happening on that. There's a lot of political back and forth on the FBI story. Russia story, I'm sure, will be around. What are some of the issues that you'll be watching next week, Bill?
Well, I think, I think one of the things we have to watch is the interaction between President Trump and Robert Mueller. Trump has been tweeting very tough things about Mueller. Mueller, he has the authority, actually, to fire Mueller, but many Republicans, I think, wisely are warning him against it. As, you know, when you fire the person who's investigating you, you give the impression you have something to hide. And there are some Republicans who are saying that if Trump fires Mueller, that will be the end of the Trump presidency. I think that may be a bit melodramatic, but not by too much, because if he fires Mueller and then the Democrats take control of the House, they will impeach Trump. And when the impeachment resolutions go to the United States Senate for a trial, if Trump has fired Mueller, that will be held very heavily against him. It looks like a cover-up, and the Republicans, in a situation like that, some Republicans might be peeled off to vote for removal. It's a very dangerous thing. Trump should not fire Mueller. He should take pot shots at him. He should. He could say easily the investigation is taking much too long, and it's got to be wrapped up. He can point out Mueller's relationship with James Comey, the former FBI director, who is now about to go on a book tour. But he should never fire Mueller, and I hope he takes that advice.
Well, the truth of the matter is, if he just leaves him alone, if he would just leave Mueller alone, I don't believe Mueller has anything on Trump. I mean, I think that if he did, he would have come up with something right now. So I just think that if my advice to President Trump is just lay off, just let Mueller be by himself there, and let Republicans in the House or in the Senate criticize Mueller. They're the ones who should be doing it, and some of them are already doing it, Bill. I know several of them are attacking Mueller. Well, Bill, another easy week in Washington. I have a feeling that we're going to be doing this every Sunday and having lots and lots to talk about, because it's just at least I've never seen it this way. I mean, I've never seen it this crazy before, Bill. Maybe you have, but I have not.
Well, I think in the late 60s. This is,
yeah,
in a way,
okay,
a repeat of the late 60s, where the atmosphere was very poisonous. And of course, during the time of Watergate, I was no fan of Richard Nixon, but the reality is, I mean, I remember the period, and I remember the press of the period, and the belief that the Constitution was being shredded, that it was the worst constitutional crisis in our history, as somebody said at the time, worse than the Civil War. And when it was over, the preening went on. We have saved the Republic. We have saved the Republic. And, of course, you know, many people forget, by the way, Watergate is going to be mentioned repeatedly, by the way, in the coming weeks. People are going to compare it to Watergate. Remember, Watergate did not end well for the Democrats. People forget that. They thought that they were just on the way to a Democratic era, that we have shown the Republicans for what they are. We have shown it was Richard Nixon. The fact of the matter is, the Democratic Party came in 1976, which was only 2 years after Watergate. That's the first presidential election. The Democratic Party huffed and it puffed and gave us Jimmy Carter. I mean, they just were not a governing party. And 4 years later, they were wiped out by Ronald Reagan. So what Watergate led to in the Democratic Party was not very good.
No, not at all, not at all. But I do think the silliest remark of the week, speaking of Watergate, was Ruth Marcus of the Washington Post calling the termination of Deputy Director McCaid a Friday night or Saturday night massacre, Friday night's massacre. I mean, come on. Comparing those two things is so silly.
Yes.
But these people, you know, they sleep and drink Watergate all day long. And it would do them a lot of good just to get over Watergate, because that was, as you say, that was a moment in time. This there's no Watergate here, at least not on the part of terminating this particular fellow. Have a great day, Bill. Thank you again for your time. And, we'll get together next week. I'm sure there'll be something interesting to talk about.
We'll find something.
Okay. Happy birthday, Bill.
Thank you, Sylvia.
All right. Enjoy your new age, whatever it may be.
Right. I will.
Thank you very much, Bill. Thank you very much, and good night as always. Bill Katz, the editor of Virgin Agenda. We always have a lot of fun with Bill. Very instructive. A lot of fun talking to him. I've always recommended check out Urgent Agenda. It's one of the best websites in the internet. A lot of good information in Urgent Agenda to get you ready for your day. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.